Greetings, everybody. I'm Jonathan Alexander, editor of College Composition and Communication, and I'm here today with Ira Allen, who is the author of Composition is the Ethical Negotiation of Fantastical Selves. Also joining us is Allison Zuba, who is the editorial assistant for the journal. Ira, thanks for chatting with us.
Yeah, thank you both. Thanks for having me here.
So I love the title. I always like titles that are sentences. And this is more than a sentence. This is a declaration. It's a full-on assertion. Composition is the ethical negotiation of fantastical selves. Tell us a little bit about your article and how you as a scholar came to this point in writing this article.
Well, this is definitely one of those that was long in gestation. let me answer the question from two different directions. One is generally... at the level of identity, I'm somebody who's always kind of interested in the disconnects between what we think is correct and how we live. There's always a disconnect. There's no way around that. That's just the world. That's just the deal. But those disconnects are interesting because they tell us a lot about what we've got going on that's not always immediately apparent. So at the level of identity, where that project comes from, it's part of just a whole bunch of different projects where I'm interested in, you know, where are the disconnects between what we think is correct, either epistemically or morally or what have you, and how we live, we behave.
When you say correct, could you also say ideal in some way, or do you mean morally correct?
Well, I sort of mean both. I mean, I mean epistemically correct, what we take to be the case, you know, and so in some ways the idea here is a lot of our most rigorous, most fully thought through, most persuasive to me also, understandings of selves, of what composition is, of what rhetoric is, are sort of de-agentifying in various ways. Are they deprivilege the human agent in one or another way? And that's for really, you know, most of the last 50 years, cashing out right now in a lot of like materialist rhetorics, post-humanist stuff. So like a lot of the stuff that we think is most compelling, whether it's most compelling ethically or morally, or it's most compelling epistemically, is, so it's, I mean, correct in this broad range of senses, often at odds with how we live in the world. And necessarily so. I'm not saying that to say, and therefore we're idiots or we're jerks or we're doing something wrong, but rather to say the disconnect between the things that we think are correct, whether correct as assertions about how the world is, or correction as assertions about how the world ought to be, or correct as assertions about how we ought to be, the disconnects between that sense of the correct and how we must be or how we are is always interesting. It's always sort of a generative place for trying to think about what the stakes of our activity are.
How does this work in a composition class?
Because I teach, I'm wearing my JOYAX hat. I teach, among other things, an undergraduate course on digital writing, on arguments in digital contexts. And, you know, one of the things that I ask students there to think about is the ways in which, so they go through this whole exercise of engaging with rhetorical theory, defining good argument for themselves in this really fulsome way, and then they make arguments and think about the ways in which the arguments that they make don't in fact comport with their view of what good argument is. And so this is like sort of, you know, a very mild version of scientific process, right? We're always saying, what do we think the thing is? How do our findings, and in the case of a lot of what we do in the humanities, our findings is actually our behavior. How our own behavior, reflection on our own behavior, how do our findings not comport with what we thought the thing was? How do we retool what we think the thing is? And so then this kind of brings back to the more specific genesis of this project, that second piece, which is I really started feeling like, well, I was teaching already really in grad school. I was teaching comp courses and reading a lot of theory. I'm a theorist. and feeling like pretty intensely this sense of, okay, but at the end of the day, this classroom is filled with somebodies. There's no way around that. And I also think a wide range of critiques of the self are correct. If those are both the case, then we need some way of managing that tension. And this article is a way of thinking about how we manage that tension, what we think is at stake there. And so what I'm urging, of course, is, you know, that we understand selves and agency as fundamental fantasies for our field, as things that we can't help but act on, whether we take them to be the fullest articulation of how the world is or not.
No, it's very true. You know, part of the reality that we inhabit is that even if I have my own critiques of selfhood, I still do things that are consequential. I can imagine that, I don't know, let's say just randomly, the president doesn't have a self. the president does are extraordinarily consequential and have material reality. So how do your students respond, though, if you tell them, your self is fantastical, but that's okay?
Well, you know, there are different audiences, right, for the same message, and so the same that communication matters differently, means differently in different spaces. I don't show up on day one and be like, hey, you're not here, but don't worry, it's cool. but I that's pretty funny. Maybe I'll start doing that. I'll let you know. I'm going to do that next semester and see how they respond.
They wandered into a class of Buddhism, you know. So
that's right. That's right. And then we'll say koans for, you know, 20 minutes or so and see what happens. It actually could be really cool. But so I'm as like a classroom teacher, I'm fairly playful. You know, I mean, like, I'm not, you know, it's, I'm not super invested in making sure that my students think about the world through the lens of my theory. I mean, like, that's less important. And in fact, that's a way of being true to the theory itself, than that they practice ways of composing selfhood in the process of the work that we're doing in ways that navigate and negotiate and sort of challenge their own activities to some extent, and their own prior composition by other sites.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, that makes sense. I keep wanting, give me the example of that. What does that look like? So where has a student sort of grappled with this notion for you? And you mentioned before, you know, students writing arguments that maybe don't reflect their sense of self in the world, or tell me, how does this play out?
Well, so two things. So first thing, somebody told me lately that's a Chris Hayes thing. I didn't know that. I've been saying that for years. Apparently, but anyway, so two things. Thing one.
You cited your source. We're good. All right.
So the first thing is a general conceptual thing. There's no such thing as doing something that's not oneself, right? I mean, whatever you do, that was you doing it. And my own kind of internal example about this is, you can't wear a hat ironically. Right? There's no such thing as an ironic hat. You're the one who chose that hat out of the plethora of possible hats to wear ironically. Right. You're the one who said, this hat specifically, this one, is not me. Which, not to be overly, what's that?
I might wear a hat sarcastically. I might wear a hat provocatively. But you
could definitely wear a hat provocatively. Absolutely. One can wear many hats provocatively.
I got you, but I get what you're saying, because I find myself at my advanced age saying to myself at times, oh, huh, why did I do that? Well, yeah. You know, if I did it, I must have wanted to do it.
On some level. Absolutely.
If I regret it, absolutely. If I did it, I must have wanted to do it. And so there is a kind of self-ironizing there, I guess, but it's also an attempt to own, okay, this is part of a complex self.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so the whole thing rests, and this is actually a thing, you know, just talking about future projects. There's a larger thing I'm working on at some point here. I've done bits and pieces toward. I don't know when the book will be, though. Just like three books down the line. But it's about selves as vectoral gestalts. So like, what is it to think of? What's a useful way of thinking about a self? A self is a vectoral gestalt. A self is a gestalt, a bunch of different bits and pieces that are lines of force. Uh-huh. Each piece a line of force, and it itself is pointed in any moment in some direction. And that's, boom, you found a self. Found it, you know. So all of which is to say then, first to finish the conceptual thought. So I don't think my students ever write something that's not themselves. I just think that they sometimes write things that are not as fully conscious negotiations of the multiple selves that they are as might be fruitful for them in their own lives.
Or they may have been overtaken by a line of force.
Yeah.
That themselves don't fully own yet.
We all are.
Absolutely. Discourse speaks through us in so many different ways. So.
Absolutely.
So then to
get to the second piece, so here's an example, here's an example from this semester, because a student just did this final argument for that particular course I mentioned, and I thought she did a lovely job on it. So here's a student who comes from, I can't say this without like breaking her anonymity, here's a student who comes from Alaska, from a very religiously Christian family, and over the students in this particular course do a bunch of group work, a bunch of thinking about how arguments speak to multiple audiences at the same time, how digital artifacts are endlessly remediable, etc. The stuff you'd sort of expect. And this particular student, for her final argument that she was making, made an argument to her conservative, homophobic, like explicitly to homophobic family members back home, that came out of her negotiation of group work with two queer people who she'd been in group work with all semester, thinking about what constitute good arguments. And so there's like ways in which sharing space with one another, if we're directed towards some specific goal, but we're thinking about values, we're thinking about the good or what we value, why, over time, sort of prompts new possibilities for negotiation of selfhood. And she made actually a very cool, you know, I mean, it's not like the most awesome argument ever, but it's a good argument. And more importantly, it's an argument that's her constituting a version of herself that's a negotiation of this social space relative to prior constitutive social spaces, and with an eye to what she takes to be the good, and I think that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a total sense, and it's a good example of how really I'm going to risk my own assertion that any good, well, what do I want to say, any good writing, any writing I really often respond to is often about those negotiations of selves in relation to different contexts, and really kind of gets at how does one think through temporally and spatially the things that are most important to us.
Yeah.
And that temporal spatial nexus is always going to be in flux, because we're always in flux in relation to it, and it's always in flux in relation to us. So I think you're hitting on a really rich way of thinking about what we do. Allison, if you're really here, what do you think?
Oh, I'm puzzling over whether I'm really here. But I really appreciate the example from your classroom that you just shared, Ira, and it makes me think about how you in a pedagogical situation guide or discuss or coach students for whom this idea of self and agency they have a very strong attachment to, in terms of the student's positionality being one that has been historically marginalized, or their selfhood or their agency has not always been addressed or recognized. And how do they negotiate the fantastical self if it, you know, an assertion of self or assertion of agency can be a kind of social resistant move for them?
Yeah, that's nicely put. I think that So first off, I should say, I cannot underscore how much, I'm not like a writing about writing guy. You know, I'm not like, I mean, I don't think it's bad pedagogy. I think it's interesting. It's just not what I do. And so I'm not super invested in making sure that my students are thinking through the concepts that I develop, right? I'm interested in having them do the things. And my experience is they really do the thing. They're doing this anyways. I'm just describing a thing everybody's doing all the time, as I take it. Obviously, I could be wrong, but that's what I believe myself to be doing. And so what I try to do is offer them avenues for doing that that are conscious and reflexive and ultimately useful. They respond pretty well to that. Like, I'm not claiming to be world's greatest teacher, but like they respond pretty well to that. Like, this semester, because it's what's in mind, right? But one of my students, at the end of class, very, very conservative student. I teach at Northern Arizona University. We have we are not lacking for the viewpoint diversity that has become so important to some of our legislators. And so one of my conservative students came up at the end of class, at the end of the semester, and he's like, hey, I really didn't expect to like this class, and I didn't think I was going to like it. I really liked it. And this is a student who, I don't care if at the end of the semester they agree with the things that I believe. That's not my job. I don't care if they agree with my theoretical framing. I do care quite a bit if they do something that I take to be this central activity of composing, which negotiates the possibilities of selves and agency. So to come back to then the core of your question, as I take it, the piece about agency there is, when we say it's a fantasy, we're not saying it's garbage, it's bullshit, don't believe in it. We're saying we can't help but believe in it. We are believing in it. Let's negotiate how that's happening. Because and I think Hartman's probably wrong about a lot of things, but if he's right about this, which is, I think, an interesting, certainly provocative concept, that fantasies are part of how we develop a livable version of reality that we didn't already inhabit, then thinking about, there's a fake it till you make it element of agency as a thing. And that has also limitations, that has downsides, and that can be taken too far and so on and so forth. But to me, this is probably where I sometimes come into conflict with some of my more post-humanist friends. I think this is sort of a vulgar Marxist humanism that I have. I think it's useful to and appropriate to believe, not because it's correct, but because we can't help but believe something of the sort, and believing it sincerely and openly is a way of taking responsibility for that belief, to believe that we have a certain kind of agency or certain kind of set of capacities. Just one more thing on that, but which is, that's not to say we can do anything, right? I'm persuaded by the kind of Lauren Berlant cruel optimism, like, no, we can't. I end most of my courses, we end with like a day of like, everything is really, pardon my language, but fucked. Things are not headed in good directions globally in a wide range of ways. And that's within that space, you still are going to be negotiating constraints. That's what we do. And so becoming enthymematic is part of how we as rhetorical scholars, how we think about what it means to negotiate constraints. And that's why this work that we're doing together is useful and valuable, not because you can do anything, but because nobody knows for sure which things you can't do.
I'm going to think about that one. We're surrounded by our own fantasies. And what I love about your thinking is the extent to which you forward the power of the fantasy as a reality effect, as having actual consequences, significant consequences. And maybe part of what we need to be doing right now is cultivating the kinds of fantasies that we all can live with collectively.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Yeah, absolutely.
We've been talking with Ira Allen, who is the author of Composition as the Ethical Negotiation of Fantastical Selves. You can read it in the December 2018 issue of CCC. Ira, thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks to both of you so much.